Hello and welcome to Multiform. I didn't have my notes in front of me, so I forgot my spiel. Every week we get together to talk about Xbox news, rumors, and the games we've been playing lately. New episodes post every Monday morning. You can email the show at questions@multiformpodcast.com. This is episode 222. My favorite number is 22, by the way, so 222 is very satisfying.
TimJ22.
Yeah, well, that used to be my gamertag, TimJ22. It is not any longer. And I'm Tim Shelton, and I'm joined this week by my friend Gus Harden.
Hello.
Spencer is unable to be with us this week. He did not give us a reason, so we'll all just have to imagine. I'm gonna imagine that he has incontinence, and he can't get himself away from the toilet. He's literally one with the porcelain right now, and if he steps away, it's like the opposite of kryptonite. I made that up. That's not true, but that's what I'm imagining.
About that.
He didn't give me a reason, so I have to make something up. It's actually probably something way more responsible, like he's working on his house, or he's watching football, or I don't know.
Who knows?
So,
not I.
This week, I would say, is not a great week, not a horrible week. Some weeks when I put together the podcast, I'm excited to talk about things, and other weeks it's like, So today's neither. It's kind of just down the middle. Let's talk about what we've been playing. First, let's talk about Xbox, and then we'll talk about other stuff. So I'll go first. I played a little bit of Gotham Knights. Nothing really new or exciting to say there. I've been playing Robin, trying to get his stuff leveled up, but I think I'm going to give up playing multiple characters and just kind of hone in on Batgirl because she plays the most like Batman Arkham games. Which, let's pause for a second. The epic voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy, passed away this week. Or at least it was made public this week. I think he might have passed a few days ago.
I think it was the 10th.
Tragic. Batman to, for my generation.
Yeah. Batman for me.
Batman. Yeah.
As well. Like not just, like, for honestly, spanning the last 20 years, I think for a lot of people, he is their Batman.
Yeah, I mean, and we've had a lot of cinematic Batmans over the years, but ever since Batman the Animated Series in the 90s, Kevin Conroy has voiced Batman across four decades. I think if you include, I mean, he was in most recently the CW shows for the Crisis of Infinite Earths. He played an alternate universe Batman in live action. He did the Arkham games. He did the Batman the Animated Series, the Justice League Animated Series, several animated movies. And of course, his voice became iconic alongside Mark Hamill's Joker in Batman the Animated Series. And of course, Joker from Mark Hamill, one of the most iconic voices.
He still plays
all.
And he loves playing it.
I thought he recently retired from the role. I thought Hamill was saying he was done. Maybe I'm misremembering.
I mean, maybe perhaps now that Kevin is no longer with us, he may very well may leave it hung up for himself.
But anyway, I just wanted, I guess, pay a little tribute, and it relevant because he voiced Batman in the Arkham trilogy of games, not Arkham Origins, but the other three, the three that were made by Rocksteady. He also was the voice of Batman in the Injustice 1 and 2. So I'm sure many people listening to this have played one of those five games. Just an iconic voice. So he will be missed. And there's other people that have voiced Batman that do a good job. You know, the current guy, I forget his name. I remember his face, but that guy. Yes.
He was in Man in the High Castle as well. Patrick.
Yeah, he does
Patrick
fine.
O'Mara.
It's just,
I like him.
It's just, you know, Kevin Conroy was Batman to me, even though a lot of other people have played the role. That was my Batman. So he will be missed. Anyway, moving on. So Gotham Knights, Modern Warfare 2 campaign. I finally started that yesterday. I was waiting for my parents to get into town. They were driving up. And while I was waiting, I played the Modern Warfare 2 campaign. Nothing really to say that wasn't said by Gus the week it came out. What's the name of the guy from 24 and Transformers that we were talking about that plays the CIA director guy in the game?
I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I know which guy you're talking about.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's a Call of Duty campaign. Nothing notable yet. I'm not that far into it. I played probably an hour, but I was enjoying it. I always enjoy the campaigns. And I was sad the 1 year they didn't have a campaign. I think we even were doing the podcast back then, and I complained about it a lot. So it's great. And I've played some more multiplayer as well. But I guess the two big things this week were we had the 40th anniversary Microsoft Flight Sim update, which I just got yesterday, so I haven't finished playing. I haven't even played that one yet. And then Halo Infinite Winter update, which came out on Tuesday, and this was the launch of all the stuff that Halo Infinite community had been waiting for. Forge, network co-op, what else? New multiplayer maps, and changes to progression for multiplayer, match XP, and the challenge overhaul, and a free battle pass. So what I'm seeing online is a lot of positivity, especially around Forge and network co-op. So it seems like there's been a lot of reinvigoration to the game. I played some multiplayer and did the match XP thing, saw how that worked. I played one of the new game types also, the one where one team gets permanent invisibility and the other team gets permanent threat detectors. And it's like a cat and mouse capture the flag, where one team's invisible and the other one can counter the invisibility with their threat detectors placement. And that was fun. I don't know that I would make like a habit of playing that mode. It's kind of like an infection where I would only play it when I'm in a certain state of mind, but it was cool. And I'm glad that we're finally getting Halo Infinite content. I haven't done the thing I said I wanted to, though, which is go back to the campaign and do mission replay to get the collectibles that I'm missing. Mostly because I don't know which ones I'm missing offhand, and I know it's going to take a little effort for me to look up and see which missions I need to replay. So I need to dig into that at some point. And I went from having nothing to play a month ago to where I have four or five games that have come out in the last few weeks or got major updates that are like top of my stack. And I've had a bunch of TV shows come out that I wanted to watch. Now that House of the Dragon and Rings of Power are done, I've been watching Andor. There's a new show on Amazon called The Peripheral that's been pretty good, and a couple other shows that I've been watching. So I've had no shortage of entertainment to watch. Plus, I went the night before last, I went to see the premiere of Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which was good. It had a very big shoes to fill with Chadwick Boseman's tragic passing. And I thought for such a hard place that they were put in, they did a good job. So anyway, that's a long ranty way of saying I've just been all over the place playing so much of and watching so much lately that I haven't dug as deep into any one game as I would have wished. I probably spent the most time with Gotham Knights of everything, which is funny because it's probably the lowest quality of everything. It's almost like I'm just trying to get through it because I want to see how the story plays out. But that's not really a great game. Reason to play a game is to get through it and end it and get it over with. That's not great. It's not what you want. So, Gus, what have you been playing specifically on Xbox before we talk about other platforms?
So I played a little bit of Forza, and I did like the new Donut Media stuff, which I was like one of the guys.
Oh yeah, forgot about that.
One of the guys is very good at the full like voice acting thing, and then the other guy is just not and is very forced. I don't know anything about Donut Media. I just know that in the little bit of time that I played it, one of the guys is good at presentation, and the other one simply is not. In my opinion. But I mean, that's a small sample size. Who knows? I'm sure doing voiceovers for games is not the same thing as presenting on YouTube. So I'll leave it at that. I mean, that was really all I did. I didn't do anything really hardly else on that. And then I did, of course, play more Smite. And that's pretty much about it. I didn't play any Call of Duty this week. I was caught up just playing other things. So yeah, that has been the Xbox journey this week, which is not very far.
Yeah, the other thing that was a big release this week was God of War Ragnarok, which is getting amazing reviews. One of the highest rated games of the year, let alone...
Are we surprised, though?
Honestly, there were some people... It's always harder to follow up with a sequel because you risk changing too much and alienating the fans. It seems to be fantastic. Normally, I play
like
big games...
everything from the last game that... worked well for everyone. They didn't try to do a whole lot of changes. I mean, it's a story-driven game.
Yeah, there is
with like slasher little like gameplay mechanics.
Well, the new one, I guess you haven't played the newer one, but it does have like gear and equipments and runes and like it's more of an RPG. Okay, yep, I know, but like I didn't know if you knew that about the last game.
Yeah,
because you were saying it's like a slasher, but it does have like a hack and RPG slash game elements.
With RPG elements. Yes.
Yeah. Which... yeah, it's like an action RPG.
Yeah,
it's a very light RPG, I would admit.
Yeah, but... it's mostly just hack and slash, which is what the original games were in anyway.
Which
I think if people appreciate this, just the light RPG elements, all it is like just like. Like little bits of like cosmetics that like add to like your strength or defense. It's like it's not like overly convoluted like it is in AC Odyssey or in Valhalla.
Yeah, and so the only reason I'm not playing Ragnarok already, because you know obviously it seems to be a great game, is and I don't really have a reason, but I never finished the first one. I liked it. I even loved it, and I loved the original God of War trilogy, and yet I just got distracted and never. I mean, I've gone back to it several times, but I still haven't finished it. So if I haven't finished that story, there's no reason for me to waste money buying Ragnarok and skip the end of the first game. So at some point, I need to get back to that. But when I'm currently playing Modern Warfare 2, Gotham Knights, Halo Infinite, and Plague Tale Requiem, and I would like to do a little bit more with Deathloop, it's probably going to be a while before I get around to God of War Ragnarok. So I might as well wait and buy it later when it's on sale. When I'm ready to play it. But so that I would have liked to have been playing that, but I'm just not ready for it. And then the other thing, which we talked about last week, and I don't want to talk about it too much because people probably listen to the show because they're fans of Xbox and mobile games get a bad rap, but I really cannot say enough nice things about Marvel Snap. It is a fantastic mobile game. Very little microtransactions and they're unobtrusive and you can avoid them completely and still experience the entire game. And I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Every match is only 3 to 5 minutes. So it's super easy to play in a short time span. Gus literally played a match while I ran to the other room to grab some cough medicine before we recorded this show, which if you can't tell how raspy my voice is, I have a really bad cough. I have kids in daycare, so they bring home all the germs and I'm always sick. So that you get on the podcast from time to time. Anyway, Gus, any one thought about Marvel Snap? We won't go into a whole bunch of detail. We did that last week, but any one thing you want to share with me or the audience?
No, I will say, the cards, I've gotten into the second pool of cards and there's just a lot of characters in there that I like wouldn't have expected to see. Or not really that I didn't expect to see, like I would expect they wouldn't put in there, but it's just like I'm more just I just didn't expect to see them. Like what's her name from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I haven't seen her yet.
Yeah, I saw her.
Quake,
yeah.
Quake's in it?
She's a card. Yeah, I know. Like, see, like cards like that, like Ebony Maw, like I didn't like, and the only time I see them is because like I'm still fairly low in the second pool of cards. So I'll get them if somebody, if I get one of the random locations that is like, here's random cards. I'll get a whole bunch of cards. I'm like, I've never seen any of these. But it is kind of nice. I'm getting out of like the monotonous lack of diversity from the first pool of cards because it was a small pool while everybody kind of gets used to the game. And now they're starting to introduce like these new cards to me that have like so much more. Like abilities that I can use to kind of like work with other stuff, which is just that just kind of brings it back to the strategy of the game. I think it's very, very cool. The different card combinations. And I know I talked about this last week, but it's like, as I get more cards and I see all this other stuff and it's like, it allows me to change my strategy, with like my try hard deck, which is what I'll use quite a bit. And then I use a few other decks as well. But as I get new cards, I'm adding them to these other decks. And then I find myself using my new decks more because I want to try out these new cards that I'm getting, but I also want to keep like the one that I know works really well. And then I just go to my other decks and like work around with some other stuff. But, I wonder if this
will ever come to console. Cause they're doing a PC version later this year.
Ooh.
And I doubt it's going to come to PC, but I mean, weirder mobile games have come to console, like Hitman Go games came to PS4. So
I would be interested to see. I mean, there's not a whole lot to it when you really think about it. Like,
No, it's just, I mean, it is literally like Gwent, if Gwent was a Marvel game.
Yeah.
And or like, well, like, actually, and that's what I wanted to say, like, the Gwent Rogue Mage game that came out, I liked it, but this fixes, like, a lot of the problems, or not problems, but it improves a lot of the things about that game in ways that make this so much more accessible. Like, the fact that you can play it with one hand, or the fact that the matches are so quick and fast that you... it's addicting, because if you lose or you win, you can jump right back into the next game and just keep going.
Oh, and my big thing with that, I wanted to add on to that a little bit, is just that the thing is, it's like, you don't know the skill level of the person you're playing. Like, they could be good, but they're using a crappy deck that they've never used before, because I know that that's a possibility, because you do the same thing. It's like,
yeah,
it's,
and
like,
it could be, they could be playing mind games.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't really use this deck a whole lot. And, or it's like, it's a whole bunch of new cards I never used, and I might just get lucky because I get good locations, and because I already kind of know how to play the game a little bit, I can use those to my advantage, even if I don't know my cards well. Or I can have my awesome tryhard deck, and I can get destroyed by a deck that seems like it's crappy, but they, like I said, they get good locations, or they just really know how to use it really well. And you don't, like I said, you don't know who you're playing against. So it could be any number of reasons why you win. It could be any number of reasons why you lose. Like, I've played very good games, and then I just get absolutely stomped in the end because they just have, like, one killer card that...
Which is why I like really Yondu, well, because he destroys one card in their deck, and you never know if that's the one linchpin of their strategy.
You're talking about Yondu?
Like, you might be. Yeah, yeah.
I love Yondu. And it's like stuff like that. And it's like,
he's from the Guardians of the Galaxy, if you're not a Marvel fan.
Yeah, and it's like, you have the locations, and the locations can completely flip your deck around. Like, you can make a strong deck into a piece of crap deck if you get the bad locations.
See, and that's another thing that the Witcher Gwent doesn't have, is it doesn't have, like, they have, like, weather effects that happen on the different parts of the board, but it's almost like they take that to another level with the three different parts of the board. Anyway, we're going into too much detail since this is an Xbox podcast, but the other thing I want to talk about is the real throwdown is going to happen. They're adding a battle mode before the end of the year, to where Gus and I can play each other one-on-one, and you can take your friends on. And it's based on the health system, Gus. So, like, you get like 10 health or whatever, and you play a match, and however many snaps you guys get on that match takes away your health, and you play until one of you's health reaches zero. So it might take three matches.
Oh.
So it's not the best of one. It's like two or three or five, because based on how many snaps you have and what your health is, you can risk reward it. And that one game doesn't decide everything.
I assume that way also you'll be able to play this one-off games too, just to, like, try.
I don't think so, because I think what they're trying to account for is, like, if you get a bad location that plays well with the other person's cards more than yours or something, that one match doesn't decide
like a little private custom game where you can just use.
Well, it's going to be a private custom game, but it's based on a health system, not a one go like the multiplayer.
I mean, I'd be surprised if they don't just add like a, where you can just play one quick match against your friend.
Yeah. Well, and I saw the roadmap had a bunch of other stuff on it. So,
we shall see.
It's cool. Yeah. It's also great that, like, Xbox Cloud is great for playing on your phone, but aside from the touch games, and even those, like, it feels like it's hard to pause those games and, like, walk away from, and nothing works as quickly as Marvel Snap. So Marvel Snap really fills the gaming void in my life for all that downtime that I have. Like, you could play a game of Marvel Snap in the time it takes to gas your car with gas. So, like, it just fits into a lot of places where you're waiting for just a few minutes, not short enough for a stoplight, but basically short enough for anything else that you might be waiting for, like a commercial break during watching TV, which not a lot of people watch commercials anymore, but you get what I mean. Anyway, let's move on to the news. Okay, first up, N7 Day, the annual fan generated Mass Effect holiday of sorts. That's November 7th, right? I'm ashamed to say I don't know this, but
yeah, I think 7th day of November.
Yeah, so N7.
N7.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mass Effect 5, they put out a teaser basically every year for this at this point. This one was a short 25-second video, I believe, and it showed what appeared to be a destroyed mass relay with some ships like floating around it, and fans decoded the message. and found a hidden audio file in the message, which after it was decoded, Mass Effect then shared a clean version of the video with the audio already decoded in it. And surprise, surprise, it is Liara. And she says, "The council will be furious, although they should already know not to underestimate people." I think they said humans, and this is misquoted. But anyway, how did we miss this? So also they said, and I think in a blog post, that Mass Effect 5 is still in pre-production. So that means they haven't even started like full production on the game, which means this is probably at least
like a one-off,
4 years away.
Yeah, this is just so, like a one-off cinematic that they just decided to throw out there to try to draw up interest.
It was almost like it was just animated art, like not actually a 3D render of anything.
It's I wonder if it was just like their way of seeing if anybody's even still interested in Mass Effect.
Oh, I'm sure they know.
I know people are,
but I think it's just a way to keep. I mean, they're trying to keep the community engaged around N7 Day, but they can't really put out anything because they don't have anything to show. But I do like that Liara is still involved. I like that they're at least they didn't do nothing. I don't know. That would have been worse, but I don't know. It's great. I mean, I don't have anything else to say. People were trying to draw more from it based on like the colors on certain ships and the silhouettes of ships and stuff. And the internet thinks they've decoded different things in the image. None of it really seemed that important to me. It's like, oh, okay, maybe Cerberus colors here. Maybe this ship from this part of the series here. There was something that maybe could tell when this was set. Some people thought it was set like a few years after the third game. Some people thought it was a few years before the end of the third game. All that is kind of semantics. It's so far away that I don't know that speculating on any of that really matters. Honestly, I bet we're going to end up getting Mass Effect 5 at the end of this console generation. Like, assuming it goes 6 or 7 years, like the last one did, and we're currently at year 2. So if we get a game 4 years from now, that'll be year 6. And hopefully by then, you know, EA will have maximized the output potential for the current generation consoles. Maybe we'll even have an Xbox Series X Pro by then. So I don't know that there's much more to say, Gus.
Do we want to do any sort of speculating, Tim, on what Mass Effect 5 might be with how light we are on the news this week?
Get
into some speculation?
Feel free. I think we've speculated when it was announced on what we thought it would be, and we wanted it to be... I saw one theory on the internet that they think... I think this is wild speculation, but they think it's going to be based on the dark ending where... They called it the red ending.
Destroy the ending where you destroy all of non-organic life, basically, which includes the Geth. It includes
and
the
then I think that one was the one where Shepard could survive.
Yeah, because if you depending on how many war assets you have, there's a quick cut at the end where you see his N7 armor piece, and he or she takes a breath in, and which is what I think. I also agree. Now, this is like something that says where you say, Liara says, the council will be furious. Although,
don't underestimate
humans.
Not
to underestimate the humans or whatever, I think she mentions humans or humanity. And which leads me to believe, or like human defiance or something, like that leads me to believe that Shepard is alive and they're going to somehow fish him or her out of the wreckage. And it's basically going to just wipe away, which is what Spencer and I said they should have done in the beginning. They should have just picked one canonical ending. Sorry, because the thing is you
hang
got
on though.
To
I have What's a up? Counterpoint to this.
What's okay? You go real fast.
The reason I don't think that Shepard will be back is for a couple of reasons. I think they will pick a canonical ending. I do think that will be the case, but I don't think Shepard will appear in the next game because I think they will have too much of a burden to carry forward the Xbox 360 or I guess they could do Legendary Edition. Okay, so it was a lot of work for them to do the whole save transfer from Mass Effect 1 to 2 to 3. That had not been done in a lot of games up until that point. For them to take your custom Shepard from the Legendary Edition Mass Effect 3 and bring it forward to Mass Effect 5, I think that's highly unlikely, and it would be a little bit jarring for people that played through the entirety of the series with a custom Shepard to pick up in Mass Effect 5 with a generic male or female Shepard off the box. And I don't think they would risk doing that and upsetting the fan base. So I think Shepard will only be spoken of and never seen.
And see, that's where I think you're wrong, because I think there's a way they can get around that. And
oh, yeah?
We remember how he was reconstructed, or were reconstructed after Mass Effect, the events of Mass Effect 1, where, so allegedly, they could have it to the point where he or she, I'm just going to say he for the purpose of this.
You look different.
Where they weren't able to completely restructure, their body. I guess we can use that as the genderless Shepard, they can reconstruct their body, but it's like they're going to be, I think they're going to be old. They're going to be largely like whatever cybernetic technology does still exist. And obviously this is starting to get so deep in the rabbit hole that I doubt their production team would even think about this, to the point where you could bring Shepard back almost as an old person and have them just kind of be more of I survived, but I'm just kind of an old figurehead now. I'm too broken to fight. And
that would be interesting. Have them be the Anderson role.
Yeah, exactly. And that or not even as an Anderson role, almost like an old man Luke from the sequel trilogy of Star Wars.
Yeah, like a mentor.
Yeah, like just have him just be there. And but he's
which will be
so,
interesting for
decrepit.
The people that romance Liara if she's the main character.
Yeah, but it's I don't. And yeah, it's obviously it's you do get into that point where it's if you did romance Liara, and obviously Liara would still be alive. That it's she could just. It could be Shepard just has lost his point or their point to they were there to fight the Reapers, and now their journey is finished because they destroyed the Reapers, unfortunately destroyed all of the cybernetic life as well, and they basically just been pieced back together with what they can find, and they will now retire to private life where they can die peacefully or whatever. And then Liara has to make peace with that decision. And you can make it kind of emotional because she was already his friend anyway, or their friend anyway. And so make it a little bit more emotional for even if they did romance. I mean, a friendly kiss on the cheek where it's you don't know if it's romantic or not, but it's it could be. And then have her go.
Man, you really got this
thing
all thought out. Look,
dude,
at you. You're sleeping.
I've had years. I've had years, Tim, to think about this.
Your gamer tag is Larry Tassoni.
Yeah.
You are her husband.
So it's you get to the point where people are going to be upset, I think, but I think people have had time to get over the whole fact, especially with how bad, objectively bad Andromeda was, for people to kind of get over what ending they chose. Because when you really think about it, the ending you chose, you made it at the very end of the game, and that's why people were mad about it, was because it just blew all of your other stuff out of the water. It's why did I even make these decisions if I'm relegated to three decisions and that's what I get? So I think people have had time to get over that. And I think the best decision I think they can make would be to bring Shepard back, maybe play as them for the first mission or so, where they're saying their farewells, goodbyes, whatever. And then people are visiting them, and then they just retire to private life, and then you start the game as your new character, which I know at the very bottom line of it, it's the whole point of Mass Effect is you play as somebody who you are them, you make them look like whatever you want. I do think that it would be better for Mass Effect to kind of go in the way from the human route and either have you play as Liara and make Liara the main character.
I would like that too.
But I think it's
too much of a departure to take away the freedom people
which
are used
that,
to.
Or at that point, it's you could choose. I would say they should make your main character an Asari.
Yeah, I think
that
would be cool.
Play as an Asari, and you can either choose to be the more masculine Asari, or you can choose to be the more feminine Asari. But at the end of the day, they're still female, or in terms of what they look like, they have a feminine body type, but it's you have the more masculine Asari and then you have the feminine ones. And I think that would be the best course of action to go with that, because that also leaves them open, because it's if you want to do time jumps, you can do that because your Asari is old. I mean, they live for 1,000 years, so you can be able to do
that is something.
Skyrim
that is
or
point.
Oblivion, where you can jump 200 years and they're still in the same part of their life cycle. So I think Asari would be the best route to take. I mean, they're probably going to choose humans because they're going to be boring. But I would say either choose Liara and play as Liara for the first game at least, and then do something with the future ones. But like you said, and like I do agree with you, the whole like bottom line of Mass Effect is that you are your player. Like you are Shepard, or whoever the new Shepard will be. That's who you are, and that's who you get to choose to be as into the next few games. But you even said,
what did they call you? Well, in the, I guess they sort of did this in the second one where you picked male or female and you got to play as the brother or the sister. So you could customize the way they look, but you were still really the character.
Which I think is kind of a cop-out, but whatever.
I mean, I guess they could do that, not with Liara, but they could do the same with two characters, and then you either get to customize the male or the female, and then the other one becomes your party member. But
I guess my only last point on this would be... With how troublesome the save thing is, it would almost make sense to have each new installment be a new character. Like, in that way, you don't have, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like, and I guess you could carry over.
Well, I meant only for the pulling like your custom Shepard. Okay. Yeah, because like for me, I played the canon in my head version of my Shepard is my 360 playthrough.
Yeah.
And even though I started some playthroughs on the Legendary Edition, I never did. My that first one experience one on 360 is my canon one.
Yeah.
So that's the one I would want to experience again. And let's say they did carry forward custom Shepherds. I guarantee it would just be the ones from the Legendary Edition because those are on the same console. Yeah. It'd be easier to get those carried forward.
I agree. But at the end of the
day, that's unlikely to be something they continue to support is cross-game progression.
Oh, well that, no, and I'm not saying that. I'm saying towards the new trilogy, if that's the direction that they want to go. I almost think that Mass Effect at this point works better as an anthology. You play as a new character every game within the same Mass Effect universe, and which with different things happening. I think a trilogy is such a massive undertaking anymore, like to even like think about that. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea to do it, but I think Mass Effect is
established enough that you can do. Well, when games take 5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
A trilogy is 15 years.
Precisely, and that's why I think an anthology from here on out works better, unless you want to take a 2 or 3 year development cycle off of the same engine and just kind of roll with that, which I don't think is a good idea. But like I hope said, I think that anthology is their best step forward. It erases the whole like people like choosing like, oh, it's my Shepard, like I want it to be my Shepard, like just say anthology series, play as Liara in the new game, play as whoever in the next game after that. Have everything be encompassed within the same universe and leave it at that. And if they want to do like maybe like the next game that they make where you choose your custom character, whatever. But that's the direction I would go with it, is make it an anthology from here on out.
Since this game is so far away, and I do intend to go back to Andromeda at some point in the future, and maybe even the Legendary Edition, but at least we have Starfield coming next year to scratch some of our space itch, even though it's a completely different type of game. But okay, well, let's move on. That is way more than I thought we'd get out of Mass Effect 5 teaser on N7 Day. Okay, number two, Gears of War is finally getting a film adaptation, but not theatrical. They are doing a film and an animated series at Netflix, and it sounds like there's room for more if it succeeds. So this is coming from The Hollywood Reporter, a well-known trade, and they're saying Gears of War video game franchise to get a feature film animated series adaptations at Netflix. They exclusively reported, and then it was corroborated by others. I immediately tweeted out that Dave Bautista is already on the phone to his agent, obviously, because he's the hugest Game of Thrones. Gears of War fan. He was even an alternate skin for Marcus Fenix in Gears 5. And sure enough, he posted a video of himself donning the armor and saying, I can't make this any easier on you. He wants to be in that movie. And I think, like Henry Cavill with The Witcher, casting someone that appreciates the property, you don't even have to make him Marcus. Like, just make him one of the squad if you want
to. Even though he kind of looks like Marcus. He could be Marcus.
Yeah, I think
Dom.
You could do him up to be.
I could see him being Dom, for sure.
I don't know. I think part of what makes Dom is his cultural heritage, because he's not I don't know if he's Hispanic, Latino.
I mean,
he's something. Maybe he's I don't know if he's Pacific Islander. I honestly don't remember, but he's not a white guy, which there are plenty of white guys in. And then there's also Coltrane, so there is multiple races in that franchise.
Coltrane, they're gonna get somebody good to play him. I can already tell. I mean, but I mean, you, although you said this is, it's not even live action anyway. Or
No, they're doing two separate things. They're doing a live action movie,
okay,
and an animated series.
Yeah. I wonder if they greenlit the
only thing
series.
I beg them to do is do not, no matter how much you think it will help, do not put The Rock in this. Like, The Rock is in too much stuff. I know he's big, and you want to put a big guy in armor. Please. I know they won't.
There are other big guys you can put in armor.
I know, but I just, like, it seems like everybody that needs a big guy in Hollywood now is just like, oh, we'll call The Rock. And maybe he wouldn't even be interested. He already did the Doom movie earlier in his career, and that didn't go super well. But I am excited for this. This is going to hinge on the CGI, though. And Netflix spent some money. Like, they're willing to turn out some money on their projects, but they don't spend like HBO level money.
Yeah, they're notoriously bad about that, in my opinion.
Yeah, their CGI, like, if I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of movies I watched from them recently that had CGI. We, funny enough, my parents are in town. We watched the Lindsay Lohan, I'm gonna call it a Netflix Hallmark movie last night. What am I trying to say? My kid's grandmother and grandfather watched it with them, and the CGI in that was awful. But that's a Hallmark style Netflix movie. Obviously, it doesn't have a very big budget. This needs to have a big budget, and there's some really like larger than life things in the Gears universe that if you're going to do them well, you need a lot of CGI. So I hope they do well with that. I mean, I think a lot of it you can do with practical makeup and designs, like the Locust and the costumes and the sets, but there's some like the Brumax and some of the other larger than life stuff. You would need like Star Wars level budgets for practical effects to do it realistically. And so they're more likely to do it with CGI. So Gus, it looks like you had something you were going to add.
Yeah, I wonder how much of the animated series got greenlit based off of the success of Cyberpunk's anime.
I don't know, but I feel like Netflix right now is just killing it in these video game adaptations because they had Edgerunners, they had The Witcher, they have this. It seems like there was something else. They did There's the League of Legends show, Arcane. Isn't that on Netflix or is that somewhere else?
I think it's somewhere else. I haven't seen any stuff for it on Netflix. So
I'm looking it up right now. Arcane is streaming on Netflix. Yep. I thought it was. So yeah, they've done like all of the highly rated video game adaptations. The other thing I wanted to throw out it to say is this has to be better than Halo. Like Halo had a huge budget and they were done by Showtime, which handed off to Paramount Plus. And the CGI wasn't great. The practical stuff was pretty good, but some of the CGI was questionable. So, and that show was okay. I enjoyed it, but I had higher expectations. So that's the bar. You need to do better than what Halo did. I think Halo was fine, but for a lot of fans, fine wasn't good enough. And I'm probably, okay, I am being generous. So I just hope we get something cool. And, I'm glad it's a movie because if it was a TV series, it would get canceled after two seasons, like Netflix cancels everything. So at least this way, it's a one-off. Hopefully it's a self-contained story. And if it does big numbers, maybe they'll greenlight a sequel. And I'm okay with that. So I think I'm pretty excited about this. Gus, will you watch? Are you, you know, just no context. They're making a Gears of War movie. Are you interested? I forget. Have you played all the Gears games?
I've played two and I've played three.
Two and three? Okay.
I'm be honest. I can't give an answer.
Not
right
the
now.
Biggest. You what?
I can't give an answer right now on whether or not I will or would not watch it.
Well, it sounds like if you've only played two of the games, you're not as a huge fan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and it's like if it looks good, I might watch it, but it's like I'm a very fickle watcher of things on Netflix that I am not already looking forward to. I might watch it. I might not. Who knows? I gotta see a first look first.
Yeah. I'm kind of like I'm bad about sticking with anything because I only have the free time to watch one or two episodes of something in a given day. And so like I haven't even finished Cyberpunk Edgerunners. I'm like halfway through and I got distracted watching, of course, House of the Dragon and then those other shows I mentioned earlier. So, OK, number three. I don't know why I didn't put this one higher on the list. I didn't really order them this week, but this is probably the thing I'm most excited about on the news this week, which is we have confirmation that Control is getting a sequel. Remedy's Control, they're calling it Control 2. We don't know if that'll be the final name. Sorry, my voice seems to be getting worse the more I talk. Here's the quote from their, I don't know what you want to call it, a blog statement, whatever they had on their website. Remedy Entertainment has signed an agreement with 505 Games, an international video game publisher and a subsidiary of Digital Brothers Group, under which Remedy and 505 Games will co-develop and co-publish Control 2, formerly known as codename Heron, a sequel to Remedy's award-winning game Control. A couple other notes I took out of that blog. Their initial development budget is 50 million euro, which I believe the first game was developed for 30 or 35, so that is an increase. Remedy keeps the IP rights. They will be using the Northlight engine again, which is what they used for the first game, as well as some other Remedy games. It will be current gen only, meaning PS5, Series X, Series S, and PC. And they confirmed, and this is the biggest surprise, Gus, Control has sold over 3 million copies. Honestly, I guess that number...
It was a good game. I liked it.
I thought the number would be higher, to be honest. But I guess...
Oh, really?
Anything a million and up, I guess, to me is a big number. But Control really was good to me. And I think just maybe it flew a little more under the radar. And it was also on Game Pass for a while.
Like, you guys had to get me in on it. Like, it took you guys weeks of, like, saying how much you liked it and when you were playing it for me to, like, get in on it. And even then, I didn't buy it because I played it on Game Pass.
Yeah, that's true. And you liked it, right?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Very cool story. Very cool premise.
One of the coolest, most unique games of the Xbox One generation. Like, cannot say enough good things about
Control. The story was just spooky enough to, like, keep me invested, but not, like, scare me away.
This is as far as I go into scary games. It's not a scary 100%. Game. It's just a thriller.
Yes.
But that is the perfect sweet spot. It's the sweet spot for me is suspense, but not actual, like, shock value, horror, and scary spookiness. So I'm super stoked for this, but it's basically just in I don't see my notes here on it, but they basically said they're basically still in early production or early pre-production, or I think they said early concepting. So they have the building blocks from the first game, but the fact that they're still concepting means they're probably working on new gameplay elements and new story beats and whatever before they even go into development. Cause you got to know what you're building before you can start building it. So this is probably 2 to 3 years out, knowing that they have a tighter budget and they usually develop games faster than some of the others just because of their budgets. And when you think about it, part of Control's world lends itself well in that the environment is kind of simple, right? There aren't a lot of NPCs. There aren't a lot of like AI generated like characters and things like that. There's enemies, there's the environment, and all of it can be manipulated with your powers. But besides that, that kind of ambiance and spookiness leads to the emptiness, which helps with what you have to code and develop and stuff like that. So I hope there's new powers and stuff, but this all seems really cool. Gus, any other final thoughts on Control?
What's up? Sorry, I think I was lost there for a second. But
yeah, I think I lost you to Marvel Snap, didn't I?
No, that was not it. We're still on Control, right?
Yeah, no, I asked if you had any final thoughts, and I think I lost your connection for a second.
I said pretty much what I needed to say. So that's why I kind of looked away for a second.
Final major news story of the week is EA is dropping Project Cars. So this one's interesting because, if you remember, Codemasters acquired Slightly Mad Studios, the Project Cars 1 and 2 developer, in 2019, and they had 150 staff at the time, and that was kind of a big deal. Codemasters was growing their car portfolio as kind of a car-focused developer, and so they bought them. But then 2 years later, EA outbid Take-Two to buy Codemasters. So Codemasters, who had acquired Slightly Mad, was then acquired by EA. Now EA is closing Slightly Mad, although they don't specifically say that, but they do say they're ending the franchise and giving opportunities for all of the staff to find other jobs within EA. But likely this will probably lead to the closure and loss of some jobs. But when you think about it, EA is trying to buff up their portfolio in racing to be as robust as it is in sports, right? Because now they have multiple games racing franchises, everything from EA's Need for Speed to, I believe they still have, I forget who makes the NASCAR game. Does EA still have a NASCAR game?
Man, I feel like they just had a new one fairly recently within the last couple of years, I thought.
Yeah, I just Googled EA racing games and it says they obviously have on mobile Real Racing 3. They still do the F1 games. They have Need for Speed. So F1 seems to be their only major franchise right now because they're not currently doing. But then Codemasters, of course, has the Dirt series, which Dirt 5 came out alongside the Series X. They have the Grid series, most recently Grid Legends. And then they had Project Cars, which remember, Project Cars 3, I don't think is out yet. So they've canceled development on that before Project Cars 3 could actually come out. And then the F1 series Burnout, which hasn't had a game in a while. So I think the NASCAR game must be Take Two. So it's interesting that they're shutting down Project Cars because they don't really have, I guess the only thing you could say that kind of is a competitor to that is maybe Grid Legends, which the Grid franchise was more of a, it's kind of a hybrid between a track racer and an arcade racer, but Need for Speed is clearly arcade. F1 is a specific type of racing and Dirt is obviously dirt racing and Need for Speed, I already said, arcade. So Project Cars was really their like closest competitor to like a Gran Turismo or a Forza, and now it's gone. So the closest competitor they have now would be the Grid franchise. So it's interesting that they think, you know, I guess that they couldn't make enough money selling Project Cars to justify its development. Or maybe the product just wasn't good enough. But Project Cars had a very fervent following. I don't know how big it was, but there are people that very much adore that franchise. So I think it will be missed. I've only played it a few hours many years ago, and it wasn't for me, but I'm more of a, I'm kind of, I don't like true realistic sim racing. And I don't like all the way too extreme arcade racing. Forza Horizon really kind of hits that sweet spot between realistic enough to feel good about like the cars feeling like real world, but also arcadey enough to have some fun and do jumps and drifts and things that are a little outside of what real life would be like. So, I mean, in some ways I'll miss it because I think it filled a good spot in the marketplace. But EA obviously thinks they know better. I hope all the people find jobs within the other EA franchises. Gus, you have any thoughts? I know this isn't a franchise. You have any affiliation with?
No, I have nothing to say about any of this. Yeah.
Okay, well, I got two more stories in the quick hits that are more up Gus's alley. Okay, two quick hits. Number one, it's finally happening. Battlefield 2042 is coming to Game Pass. It's coming to Game Pass and EA Play with the start of Season 3, which does not yet have a date, but we know it'll be in the next few weeks, either late November or early December, because Season 2 is coming to a close. So it will happen soon after that. Also, there's going to be a free play weekend for Xbox players, as well as other platforms, but the Xbox dates specifically are December 1st through December 4th. So you can play the game for free those 4 days, regardless of if you have Game Pass. Now, what I wanted to add with this is I'm surprised it took this long because all the reports on all the metrics we have to gauge things off of, like as far as population counts, are showing that Battlefield 2042 is really struggling, that people have chosen to revert back to Battlefield 5 and Battlefield 1 rather than play 2042. And the reception and the population, as far as being able to matchmake and find games without bots and stuff, seems to really be bad. I've seen reports that are saying, I don't know what PC platforms it was or if it was console, but that there it was down into the single digit thousands on some platforms. So I'm surprised they didn't put it in Game Pass earlier to goose the numbers to keep the game alive. But then again, maybe they thought they could ink out some more sales of the game on sale, you know, for whatever reason before they put it on Game Pass.
That's exactly what happened. Yes, I know. It's like
it's a Venn diagram, right? They have to say at what point do we have to discount it too much to sell copies that we're better off taking a big chunk of money from Game Pass to put it in Game Pass.
I agree. It's just, and it just sucks that that's like the way that they even look at it. And I honestly, He's like,
hasn't it been out a year? Only a year?
Was 2042 really even like that bad? Like, did it deserve the criticism that it got? Maybe.
I don't know. Some of like, I haven't played it since the beta, but like the maps were too big and boring. Yeah. I felt that when I played it. And the lack of the class system was really rejected by the Battlefield fan base, mm-hmm. which they're bringing back, but they're not bringing it back till next year. So I will say I'm 100% going to download this when it's free on Game Pass.
Oh,
and I'm going to try it, but I'm not going to be like a regular player. Yeah. Like I'm going to play, you know, 10 hours like just
said,
to get
I'm
my fill
money
and then I'm going to dip. I'm going to play with my friends maybe a couple times and then I'm out. I'm done.
Yep.
So
unless it like really blows you away with whatever they add in season 3.
Yeah. Which... I mean, when they add the class-based stuff back next year, that might be enough to make bring some people back, but there's already rumors that this game is starting to simmer down and that they're already working on the next Battlefield, which if they're doing every 2 years would mean that comes out next fall, or if they wait another year, which they probably should at this point, it would be the year after. So I do
like the love that Battlefield 1 has gotten from the community of late. Like I feel like I see videos of people playing it all the time, and it honestly, it's getting to the point where I'm almost considering reinstalling it because I have it and I enjoyed it. I mean, I know I was very much a purist, World War One purist. I'm like, I'm not using anything but bolt actions because nobody used these other stupid guns. And then I was like, I got over that.
Yeah. Well, this was supposed to be the quick hits, but this week we have time to dive deeper.
Yeah.
I also appreciate that Battlefield 1 is kind of like the best modern Battlefield game. Battlefield 4 probably being the best one that is set during the modern era, but Battlefield 1 had some improvements over Battlefield 4 as far as gameplay and resolution and stuff that made it slightly better. But the final quick hit this week is a very minor one. It's just that Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and the launch of Call of Duty Warzone 2 are both going to come alongside Season 1 on November 16th. So this podcast is coming out on November 14th, so that's only a couple days away. So I honestly didn't realize that Warzone 2 was coming so soon. Also, apparently the download size for just Warzone 2 is like 120 gigs. It's just shy of 120 gigs. So when you add that to what Modern Warfare 2 already takes up like 60 to 80 gigs on my Series X, I'm going to have 200 gigs of Call of Duty. That's just insane. I do appreciate that Warzone is going to be its own launcher, but does it really need to be that big? I don't understand why Call of Duty is so much bigger than every other game. What is it about the way they're coding or the way they're packaging their files that it is so much bigger? Like, there are very few games that are over 100 gigs. And, like, at least Destiny 2, when it bloats in size, it has a lot of diverse content. How Warzone has one map and a bunch of different guns and textures. I don't understand why it is so poorly packaged. Maybe it's, I don't know. Hopefully there's a Series X optimized version that has less data storage, because when it's forced onto an SSD, you don't need multiple iterations of different shaders because you can pull them all from the same place on the disc. Gus?
And I know it's like such a weird thing to do, is like to like bundle like cooperative on its own, multiplayer on its own, single player on its own. It's like I get it, but it's like, why are these files so big? Why?
I don't understand.
Like, we've never figured that out, have we? I mean, we've been talking about it for a long time. Like, why are these files so big? Because it was a problem with Battlefield for a long time too.
I feel like I'm the only one complaining about this next thing I'm about to say. But there have to be other people. I just don't hear about them because they're probably some niche Call of Duty community on YouTube. But why, when you boot up Call of Duty, does it open up a screen that says connecting to servers, and then it says game requires an update, and then it boots you back to the title screen, and then you log back in? Like, why does that screen exist only in Call of Duty? Like, every other game, it connects to the servers, and then you're good. Why is there all this weird step where, why didn't it do the update when I launched the game? Or why is there an update inside the game different than the update that I do at the console level? That little gray box that has been in the last 10 or 15 Call of Duty games, the whole update connect to server thing, why is that there? I don't understand. I don't understand why that's necessary. No other game does it that way. Maybe they have a little thing in the corner about like when you leave it on standby, it's not connected to the server, and then it turns green when you connect. Like, even Mass Effect Andromeda had that for its multiplayer. But Call of Duty like interrupts your flow when you launch the game. You're then sitting waiting for it to connect. And then when you get to the title screen, past the title screen, it says, oh, sorry, now we need an update. But it's not an update to the game. It's an update inside the game that boots you back to the title screen. It just feels like it's a bad experience is what it is. And the fact that they haven't changed that over 10 games to just remove that small barrier to entry to get you to the game faster. I mean, if your goal is to get people to play your game and your goal is to keep people playing your game, you should make it as easy as possible for them to get out of a match and back into the next match. Also, the current problem, like Gus, when you and I were playing the other day and we were in a lobby and how you were like changing the settings for the matchmaking, yeah, and every time you like clicked on something, it was kicking all of us out of our customization and our menu options.
They need to figure out a way to like separate those.
I don't know if it's been fixed because I haven't played in a party since the most recent update, but yeah, that needs to be fixed immediately. Like there's no reason that I shouldn't be able to do everything in my menus until we go into the match. Like just like, why isn't that instanced? Why isn't that just on my machine? Why is everything that Gus does affecting what I'm doing if it's just happening in the background? It makes no sense. But these are the problems that happen when you have to have your Call of Duty ship every year, regardless of quality, because you have to ship a Call of Duty every year. Like any other game probably would delay to next quarter, but a Call of Duty has to ship in October or November every year, or Activision stock will plummet. So that's how we get to a place like this. This is the most I've done about complaining about Call of Duty in years, because I've been pretty satisfied.
Just the UI is not very good. I agree.
That is the UI and the menu stuff is the problem. Yeah. The gameplay is pretty good. The problems I have with this year's game are all in the menus, the attachments, the stuff you do in the actual menus. The gameplay I enjoy. The gameplay, I think, solid. The campaign, so far, solid. And I've been very generous, I think, in previous years that I've really liked the campaign and the multiplayer in most of the last few Call of Duties. So this year, I guess I'm just being a little more critical. And I think with justifiable reason. Although, this is also the top-selling Call of Duty in the last, like, 15 years or something. So people clearly are... the gameplay is more important than the menus, because even the complaints that people have had have not been enough to stop it from selling like gangbusters and having great word of mouth and stuff. And I'm sure Warzone 2, when it launches, is going to be huge for free to play, in addition to Modern Warfare being huge for paid. So, well, that was supposed to be a quick hit, and I went on a rant. But I think we need to wrap this up, because you and I have a lot of Marvel Snap to play.
The Colts are also playing here in an hour as well.
Yeah, my parents are currently watching the Chiefs game at Buffalo Wild Wings, so they're going to be back in probably an hour. So but obviously, yes, we're recording this some on Snap. Sunday.
I think some more missions dropped while we were doing this.
And I'll probably do, what time do the Xbox missions even drop every day? Or then are they always
it's
in
every
the afternoon?
Like 6 hours. It's every 6 hours. Oh. I'm pretty sure six.
Well, that helps.
Hours.
Yeah, that helps for worldwide stuff, because I don't know if it's in other countries, but that helps.
It gives you two more, I think, like every 6 hours, and up to a total of six that you can
I have the
going
notifications disabled, so
and
I don't
you can
get
also pay them. Gold for more missions if you're. Which well, that's is the that thing. Could be possible. Why that might be part of why I'm finding it hard to get credits is because I'm not paying the extra gold to get more missions.
Well, I'm not doing that either, though, and I have way more coin than you do.
Yeah.
But
you also
earn...
You've been playing a lot longer than me.
Yeah, that's true. I was in the beta, which, I don't know, that happened a couple of months ago. I played it, like, nonstop for, like, a month. I think I said this on last week's episode, though. I stopped playing because I was worried that they were going to... By the time the final version came out, it would be filled with microtransactions. And I was pleasantly surprised when I saw people online praising all over the game, which made me realize that maybe it had been just like the beta and not been destroyed. So, well, anyway, thanks for listening. Sorry my voice has been so raspy this week. Hopefully I'll be over it by next week, and I'll be healthy for another 2 weeks before my kids bring home another germ ridden cold for me. I've taken COVID tests and they're always negative. It's just the daycare colds that your kids assault you with when you have young children. So anyway, thanks for everyone for listening. We will be back next week. Hopefully Spencer will have played Flight Sim, because I would love to hear about it. I want to get in and try the helicopters. Gus, do you plan on checking that out?
Yes, I still have it installed. Hopefully, I just wish, man, they would do something about
the update system.
The update system, it sucks.
Yeah, I know. That's honestly why I haven't played it yet, is because I know once I launch the game, it's going to ask me to do another update in the game, which will take, you know, 6 hours to complete, and I'll have to leave my Xbox on just sitting doing it, because it doesn't do it in the background. There's no way to do it without just leaving your console on. And so I don't know, maybe I'll do that right now, because I'm going to go into the other room, so I could just leave it sit to update Flight Sim. But also, Call of Duty is taking up all my hard drive space now, so it's a mess. Also, I wonder if they're going to let you preload Warzone 2, or if it's going to be everyone crashing the servers to try and download it on Tuesday or Thursday, whenever it comes out. What's, is that Wednesday? Wednesday's the launch day? I don't know. That date. How do calendars work? I got the hiccups now. Jeez. Okay, I'm going to end it there. Thanks for listening. I'm Tim Shelton. You can follow me on Twitter, as long as it continues to exist and doesn't implode, at Tim Shelton.
Oh, and I'm Gus Harden. There we go.
Gus with the mute. Jeez.
Yeah, I always mute myself between, because I also like clear my throat and sniffle sometimes behind the mic. Best. I'm Gus Harden. That's simply me.
Yeah. At Multiform Pod if you want to yell at Gus. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
New episodes post every Monday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern. You can contact us on Twitter at Multiform Pod or by email at questions@multiformpodcast.com. If you enjoyed our show and you're feeling extra generous, please share it with your friends or on social media. You can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or anywhere you listen.